From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, we'll explore how Donald Trump and Joe Biden are trying to win over voters in Wisconsin.
We are perpetually on the razor's edge when it comes to presidential elections. We could not be more purple. What suggests is going to be different this fall?
We'll speak with one of the co-founders of Milwaukee Record to learn how they'll approach covering, or not covering, the RNC. Plus, we'll learn about the benefits of switching out that summer cocktail for a mocktail.
Mocktails have so many wonderful benefits in the same context and settings that many people drink cocktails. So it still can be a very social drink, minus the alcohol.
All that's coming up on Lake Effect, but first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. Today, we'll hear the story of Gorilla Gay Bar. It's when a group of LGBTQ plus people took over traditionally straight bars in Milwaukee. But we'll start with this. Many of the ads you see during an election season aren't funded by a campaign or candidate. Instead, they're funded by organizations, often PACs or super PACs, and these ads focus on issues that are important to voters, or at least issues they hope will rally voters either for or against a political party. J.R. Ross keeps track of these ads on WisPolitics.com, and he joins Swing State of the Union host Joy Powers and Sam Woods to talk about some of the issue ads we're already seeing in this election cycle, from presidential candidates to congressional candidates.
We'd like to start with an issue that a lot of voters are saying is top of mind, which is abortion and abortion rights. Here's an ad that speaks to this issue in Wisconsin.
Imagine you need life-saving care in an emergency. Imagine someone you love does, only to be turned away. That's what's at stake. As the Supreme Court decides whether hospitals are allowed to provide abortion care to save a patient's life, it could lead to politicians restricting other life-saving care and interfering in doctors' ability to do their jobs or even throwing them in jail. Don't let politicians take away life-saving health care.
It doesn't seem like the ad is advocating for a specific candidate, maybe against a candidate, but not for a specific candidate. What's the goal with this type of advertising?
It is part of a message you're going to see overall about abortion. Democrats had a better than expected year in 2022, in part because of abortion. I mean, typically, the party in power in the White House struggles in midterm election. Democrats didn't do great in some places in 2022, but they won some places they weren't expected to or did better than expected to, in part due to the abortion issue. They feel like that is a salient issue again in 2024. They're driving the message that if Trump were to win, he could push a national abortion ban, he could restrict access to abortion services, you know, just all kinds of things. You know, if you look at the big picture of issues that voters are focused on, inflation is a huge one, right? The economy, from an academic point of view, is doing quite well. It's growing. We're adding jobs. It's good in that regard. But people feel like it's not going well in general because prices are going up. They feel insecure. How do you combat that issue? That's a tough one to fix in the next, you know, 5 months. The border, another issue. Like inflation, Republicans have an advantage on that issue. If you look at the polls, like if the polls are correct, then Republicans have an advantage on those issues. Democrats have an advantage on abortion. It is clear that Republicans are struggling mightily of how to address that issue with a base that wants no exceptions, maybe exceptions for rape, incest, life of the mother, an electorate that is much of a spot on that issue.
You know, as you mentioned, it is hard to combat some of these issues that people are saying are very important for them. For Republicans, that's going to be abortion. For Democrats, that's the economy. Of course, the economy is a perennial issue in election years, but we are hearing a new term in political ads. We're hearing Bidenomics. Here is an ad actually on that issue.
Americans still think the economy's struggling.
60% of workers say their income has not been enough to keep up with inflation.
Anybody who's gone to the grocery store or filled up their gas tank in the last month knows that the bills are going up a little bit again. Gas was up a little bit, food was up a little bit. Eggflation is bad.
Still a thing.
Definitely costing more to go about your daily routine.
Americans, it's not working.
Folks, it's no accident. That's Bidenomics in action.
Now, of course, this was another issue ad, but it's not just taking aim at Biden, although his name is used. It's also taking aim at Tammy Baldwin, and I would guess a number of other Democrats. What are they driving home here?
So Joe Biden thought it would be a good idea to coin this phrase Bidenomics and really pitch that things like the Inflation Reduction Act and other things they've done are driving this economic boom, right? They're good for Americans. Opponents love the fact that Joe Biden has basically placed his name on something with economics in the word, because most voters don't feel that great about the economy right now. Again, from an academic point of view, somebody studies, you know, economics, you would say that our economy has been fairly strong. But from a personal point of view, people are struggling, or they feel a struggle in paying their bills. Republicans are going to hammer on that issue over and over again. I mean, what did Bill Clinton say in 1982? It's the economy, stupid. It's what drives things. When the economy is going well and people feel good, other issues then tend to overshadow the economy. When people aren't feeling very good about the economy, it drives things that has been tried and true, cycle in and cycle out. So that's it. It's just a matter of Republicans trying to lasso the Bidenomics tag around Joe Biden and Tammy Baldwin and any Democrat running anywhere in the country this fall to say, your struggles, your higher grocery bill, it's all because of Bidenomics and Democrats.
You know, in some ways, it feels like we're in the very early days of this still, even though we are, you know, getting pretty deep into 2024. Do you expect there to be, you know, a greater kind of flow of ads as we are getting closer and closer to November?
Oh, yeah. My joke has been, if I had been smarter, I would have bought a TV station in Wisconsin 25 years ago. They make money hand over fist, it seems like, every fall because of the millions and millions dumped. Because if you look at it, there are maybe six states that really matter. Some lists have seven. You know, it just depends on which list you look at. But every list I see has Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada, Arizona, and Georgia. Of those six, Joe Biden has to win every state he took in 2020 and Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, and he's president for another 4 years. He can lose Nevada, lose Arizona, lose Georgia, and be fine. Now, if he loses Wisconsin, Michigan, or Pennsylvania, he needs to pick up other states, right? He needs to grab one of those at least. But if you think about how those states traditionally vote, it's hard to see how Joe Biden loses the quote-unquote blue wall of Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, but then wins in Nevada and in Arizona and in Georgia. I've been covering Wisconsin politics for almost, 24 and a half years at this point. Every presidential election I've covered in my career has been decided by 22,000 votes or less, except for two. And Barack Obama was on the ballot in both of those. The other ones, Joe Biden won by less than 21,000 votes in 2020, Donald Trump by less than 22,000 in 2016, John Kerry won Wisconsin by less than 12,000 votes in 2004, and Al Gore won it by less than 6,000 votes in 2000. Like, we are perpetually on the razor's edge when it comes to presidential elections. We could not be more purple. What suggests is going to be different this fall? Now, you know, polls, they're snapshots in time, but everyone that I see has Joe Biden and Donald Trump within a point or two. So what suggests is going to be different this fall? We're going to matter. And campaigns feel like when a state matters, you go spend money there. So ads are not the end all be all. You still have to have an organization, which means like offices and volunteers and paid staffers and knocking doors and turning people out. But they want to communicate to people as much as they can via TV, via digital, via radio. And so it's going to be a very, very heavy October, November, Wisconsin on TV. If you want a break, go watch TV like in Illinois, maybe, or Indiana. You won't see as many ads because they don't matter as a presidential race. But we've got a contested presidential race. We've got a Senate race that could help determine the balance of the U.S. Senate. We have two congressional races that might end up playing a role in who controls the House. Like, you couldn't be more important than Wisconsin if you tried. There may be a couple of the states that are equally important, but it's hard to find one that's more important at all three of those federal levels in Wisconsin is.
J.R. Ross is the editor of WisPolitics.com and a regular WUWM contributor. He spoke with Joy Powers and Sam Woods, hosts of WUWM's Swing State of the Union podcast. You can hear more about how President Joe Biden and former President Donald Trump are courting voters in Wisconsin with things like advertisements, and how their messages are landing with voters in the latest episode of Swing State of the Union. Find it at WUWM.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also tune in tomorrow at noon right here on 89.7 WUWM. The Milwaukee Record is known for music, culture, and gentle sarcasm. It's a resource Milwaukeeans can turn to when any number of quirky events or developments unfold here. That could be the closing of a favorite local movie theater or the whereabouts of a famous Milwaukee power walker that slightly resembles an X-Men character. WUWM's Mayon Silver sits down with Matt Wild, one of the site's co-founders, to find out how they're handling the Republican National Convention. They begin with Milwaukee Record's approach to political coverage, which includes bare-bones voter guides for people who have just minutes to catch up before they mark their ballots.
You've had some of those kind of humorous and boiled down voter guides. I also noticed that around the 2022 midterm elections, you published an article about 9 Milwaukee places to relax or break stuff should you need to do such things in the upcoming days.
Frankly, I forgot that we had published that, but I'm glad you brought it up because it feels like we could definitely do a redo of that for 2024. So thanks for that.
Yes. And on that note, like, are you thinking about RNC coverage or are you not like even going there yet? I mean, we have a couple weeks.
My opinion on the RNC, both just as a citizen of Milwaukee and as someone who writes about Milwaukee, my opinion on it has changed and has fluctuated so much in the last 2 years, and certainly within, I think, even more in the last 2 weeks. At first, when it was announced that the RNC would be coming to Milwaukee, in the very beginning, I was excited because it felt like, oh, good, this is a do-over, obviously, for the 2020 DNC, which really not only didn't happen, but was just kind of this weird black hole downtown. It wasn't that it just didn't happen, but downtown was still kind of fenced off, and there was just nothing going on down there, obviously, during the height of the pandemic. So when it was announced that the RNC would be coming to Milwaukee, I was kind of excited. I was like, oh, good, this is a do-over. And then as time went on, it was like, wait a minute, why should we be hosting this political party who seems to have nothing but contempt for the very city that they want to throw their little party at? And of course, that has really been amplified in the last few weeks with Trump's comments about, is Milwaukee a horrible city? Did he say that? Did he not? Was it in what context did he say it? And just that entire conversation has become so toxic and is so wearying to witness being hashed out online that at this point, frankly, I'm really contemplating just doing what I know a lot of people are going to be doing for the RNC, and that is just kind of heading out of town and maybe staring at some trees for 4 or 5 days in the Wisconsin wilderness. And not only just being out of town for the RNC, but not covering it at all. Thoughts on coverage, again, have changed a lot over the past years and months and weeks. I don't have a media credential to get inside the RNC. I think that's wise. I don't think I should be allowed to have a media credential for any political party, to be honest. I feel very lucky that along with my business partner, Tyler Moss, we own and operate Milwaukee Record by ourselves. We are the only two full-time employees. And so, you know, we answer, you know, certainly we have advertisers and things like that, but editorially, we answer only to ourselves. So I feel very lucky to have the option, possibly, of kind of sitting this one out. I don't know exactly what our coverage is going to be. It's kind of 50-50 at this point. Do I stick around or do I leave? That may be decided, you know, maybe the week before at this point.
Or you could paraphrase it as, do I stay or do I go?
Exactly. I think that is the way to put it. And that question has not been answered yet. Like I said, that may come down to the wire like I said, the conversations around it have become so toxic.
And is the lyric, if I stay, there could be trouble. If I go, there could be double. Is that what it is? I can't remember.
That's true, too. And that's actually it brings up a good point, too. There's this idea of like, well, we obviously should stay in Milwaukee for that week and cover this because, as we're told time and time again, the eyes of the world will be on Milwaukee during this week. And why shouldn't we be, you know, in that coverage and contributing to that coverage? And if all eyes are on Milwaukee, then, you know, a lot of those eyes may fall upon Milwaukee Record and our coverage. So there's that idea of like, well, you know, maybe something terrible or maybe something great would happen during that week or something, you know, monumental. And if I'm, you know, in the woods somewhere up in northern Wisconsin, we'd miss that. So that's a worry, I guess. You know, we'd be missing out on all that sweet, sweet traffic we could be getting. But the more and more I think about it, too, you know, like I said, people say, oh, the eyes of the world will be on Milwaukee. And I don't doubt that they will be on Milwaukee for those, you know, 4 days. And then after those 4 days are gone, their eyes will be off of Milwaukee. And who will be left but us Milwaukeeans? There are plenty of other politicians, Republican politicians, who have less than glowing things to say about Milwaukee. People like Ron Johnson, people like former Governor Scott Walker, on and on and on. So I don't know. Like I said, at this point, maybe it's best for me to go up north for that week.
You wouldn't have felt that way about the DNC, though?
I don't know. I it's easy to always to say that. Well, did you think that about the DNC? Well, no, I didn't, because there weren't loads of politicians, Democratic politicians, talking trash about Milwaukee. So there's the difference. Did I think it was going to be the giant boom that it was made out to business-wise for the DNC? No, that seemed a little overblown to me as well. But I guess it's easy to try to look for, you know, equal sides here, but the fact is that the sides aren't equal in the discourse when it comes to Milwaukee. There is definitely one political party that has said very, very nasty things about Milwaukee and one political party that has said fewer nasty things about Milwaukee. So, yes, my feelings about the DNC versus the RNC were a little different. Business-wise, I think they were more and more aligned that perhaps they weren't going to be the giant economic boons that they were made out to be.
And so, you know, some of the things you do at the Milwaukee Record is so unique in the Milwaukee landscape when it comes to media or even just the Milwaukee culture that people outside of Milwaukee don't necessarily know about. So, for instance, you've just did a recap of weird food articles, you know, with the definitive gas station pizza rankings or letting people know which Cousin Subs is better of the two at Exit 64 just north of Milwaukee. So I was wondering, like, putting politics aside, which I know is very difficult to do, but just having this big event happening in a city and in a southeastern Wisconsin where you're so tied to and connected, like, how do you feel about outsiders knowing this type of inside information? Like, where do you stand on that, just as someone who traffics in these kind of funny stories and quirky stories?
You're right. We certainly do specialize, I think, at our best in very, very hyper-local stories. Not all of them are, I wouldn't call them inside jokes, but sometimes a lot of our content does kind of almost take the form of inside jokes. You know, we're talking about very, very specific things to the Milwaukee experience. I mean, we have t-shirts and merchandise about that feature pictures of the, you know, snow pile that forms outside the Marcus Center Performing Arts Center parking garage every winter. We have, you know, t-shirts with the railroad bridge going into Bayview where semis always get stuck. So yes, we do specialize in these very, very specific things. And I do understand that people like Visit Milwaukee obviously are appealing to a much broader audience. They're appealing to people who want to visit here, where I think we, Milwaukee Record, are we specialize in people that already do live here and who are kind of in on all the Milwaukee culture and, you know, maybe some of those Milwaukee inside references or inside jokes, if you want to call them that. So I think that's where we shine. And if people, you know, from out of town or out of state, you know, happen upon our stuff, it's funny when that does happen sometimes and you see people who are very, very confused about why are you showing, you know, this picture of a Walgreens on Brady Street? But of course, anyone who lives in Milwaukee knows that the Brady Street Walgreens is one of these infamous black holes of time and space. And so it's funny when these things do kind of get out of the city and get out into the wild. But I hope in the end that, you know, for folks who don't live here, that I hope that they come away with a sense that this is a very quirky place. And there's at least one media outlet in town who's seems dedicated to covering that quirkiness. So I think that's where we shine. And hopefully people both in and outside of the city appreciate it.
So would you say you would want convention goers to know about Tabman or Milverine?
You know, we've thought about doing that kind of coverage for the RNC, because certainly there's going to be, and there already have been, plenty of restaurant guides and guides to certain neighborhoods and this and that. And I think, you know, if we do have any kind of coverage like that, it would be of that variety, very, very specific Milwaukee things, such as, you know, where to spot Milverine within the RNC security zone, or perhaps, you know, he won't be able to walk down this street, so you might spot him here, that sort of thing. So again, I think that's where we shine, and it's stuff that we enjoy, and it's stuff that I think that everyone in Milwaukee can kind of smile about and kind of feel part of a larger community.
Can you give a small synopsis of Milverine to someone who doesn't know?
Oh boy, where to start? With Milverine, he is a local character who has made his fame on the fact that, bears a vague resemblance to the X-Men character Wolverine, as portrayed by Hugh Jackman in the X-Men films. And not only that, he is a bit of a power walker. He just loves to walk downtown Milwaukee, really all over the city, Bayview, everywhere. And typically he does this in certainly the warm weather months. He does this shirtless. He's walking around shirtless. He's got a real powerful stride, and he kind of looks like Wolverine. Thus, way back, I don't know how long it's been, you know, the 2010s, some genius came up with the name Milverine, and he's become this kind of cottage character ever since, people spotting him taking selfies with people. And he's got a little dog these days, and he's on social media these days, and he's a true delight to follow on social media.
So, you know, someone in their, you know, new to Milwaukee dreams might be able to stumble on him.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of the RNC, like I said, his kind of main zone of walking is in that area. So I know the security zone is pretty wide, and there's the parade zone and the protest zone. But so while you won't see Milverine, you know, obviously right up alongside the Pfizer Forum, you will see him kind of out a little farther, unless he has media credentials and I don't, which I wouldn't put it past him.
Awesome. Matt Wild of the Milwaukee Record, thank you so much for chatting me about all things tourism and RNC.
Thanks.
Matt Wild is the co-founder of Milwaukee Record. He's also a regular guest on Lake Effect for our monthly Milwaukee Music Roundup, which you'll hear on Monday. He spoke with WUWM's Mayon Silver. In about 15 minutes, we'll learn about all the different ways to mix up a healthy mocktail. But first, we'll tell you about the Gorilla Gay Bar takeover.
Gorilla Gay Bar was really born and inspired from this idea to disrupt the status quo, to like shatter expectations and like remix everything by taking all those rules and just throwing them out the window and getting a whole bunch of people together who otherwise would never be under the same roof.
That's coming up on Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. Listening to Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. As June comes to a close, we want to share a story of Pride history, one you might remember if you were enjoying Milwaukee's nightlife 15 years ago. That's when Guerrilla Gay Bar was at its peak. Anonymous leaders would rally dozens to hundreds of LGBTQ people to take over a popular straight bar in Milwaukee. Michael Takash is board chairperson of the Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project, but he was also one of the main organizers for Guerrilla Gay Bar.
You know, Oak Creek was basically a farm town. It was not the suburban metropolis it is today. There was no IKEA. There was no movie theater. There was no Target. There was nothing. I mean, when we had McDonald's open, my school actually went on a field trip to see it. Like, it was some kind of, like, you know, technological advancement. So when I was 15, I started going to Lacage, which was like the big dance club of the 80s in Milwaukee. My friend's sister was in the drag show. She got us in constantly. I mean, like, there was no question asked. I was never ID'd, carded, nothing. I don't know if it was because I was young, blonde, and cute or what, but, you know, we would get in and then I would kind of get to see what adult nightlife looked like. And it was quite different. At that time, Lacage and 219 were probably the only gay bars in Milwaukee that would let straight people in comfortably and actually welcome them. And I know that at one point, because of the drag shows at those two bars, which were like epic productions unseen ever since, it was like full ensemble shows that went on for hours and had like all these like stagehands and, you know, special effects and like amazing costumes and all this stuff. So people would come just to see the shows. And like, if you were straight, it was no big deal to go to these bars to see the shows, but you probably wouldn't want to be seen going in them any other time. And it was not really the safest environment at Walker's Point. I remember people, you know, if you went to 219, which was at, of course, 219 South 2nd Street, you would not walk to Lacage, which was five blocks away, because it was dangerous. Like, someone might drive by and, you know, throw something at you. Someone might drive by and yell things at you. People might get out of the car and chase you. There was real distinct homophobia in the air down there back then. And, you know, people got bashed and brutalized and robbed and all kinds of terrible things that are unthinkable today. You know, over the next 15 to 18 years, I mean, rave culture exploded and kind of competed for a while with the bars. And that was like the height of inclusivity, because anyone could go to raves, no matter what color you were, no matter what gender you were, no matter what sexuality you had, everyone was welcome. And it was literally the more the merrier. That was like the apex, like the early 90s of inclusive nightlife. And after that, like, when raves started trickling off and it was kind of just back, like approaching the millennium, most of the big dance clubs in Milwaukee started disappearing. And there was this polarization in nightlife, like towards this binary decision of like, are you going to a gay bar or a straight bar? And it was really weird because right around that same time was when a lot of the legacy gay bars started closing. Things were much more rigid then. I'm sure older millennials can tell you, like, if you went out and you went to a straight bar, like, you were constantly looking over your shoulder. You felt uncomfortable. You felt nervous. You felt like, you know, they might make fun of you or not serve you or ask you to leave. I don't know. Or if the business didn't, the other clients might. A rather enigmatic MySpace post went out calling for organizers to join this group that was going to be planning nightlife takeovers. And if you were interested, you were to send your information to an email address and explain why you wanted to be involved. So I reached out and I said, you know, this sounds fun. And at that point in my life, I had lived in Milwaukee for so long and like had just gotten so settled in my ways that I was just eager for something to change. And that year really, really brought the change. On Thursday at midnight, we would announce where we were going. The details would only be available on social media. We did not tell the bars ahead of time. There's a long myth that we were in cahoots with the bar owners. They knew we were coming, so it really wasn't a surprise, but that isn't true. I mean, we never told any bar we were coming, ever. We just showed up at 9:30 p.m. sharp on Friday night and just like poured into this bar. And ultimately, you know, over the course of that night, we showed the economic power of our dollars to bars that maybe had never really had gay crowds in before. Guerrilla Gay Bar was really born and inspired from this idea to disrupt the status quo, to like shatter expectations and like remix everything by taking all those rules and just throwing them out the window and getting a whole bunch of people together who otherwise would never be under the same roof. And it worked like magic in Milwaukee because I think Milwaukee was starving for something new at that time. They were starving for experience. And on a monthly basis, we went out every first Friday and took them on a tour of their own city. They were a tourist in their own town and got to be a little bit subversive in the process. It was a really wild, diverse group of people. I mean, we had tons of people of color who I had not seen in other bars in the city ever. We had trans women who would come out in droves because it was so safe and so fun. And, you know, maybe these are places they would have loved to have gone, but they wouldn't go alone. I mean, who can blame them? We'd have older people who like don't go clubbing anymore and feel kind of out of place. And something like this, it was, they'd come out every month. That'd be like their big night out. We tried to avoid small spaces that would be dangerous, you know, like where if people went and they really poured in, that it would create some kind of liability for the business. We didn't want that. So places like Landmark Lanes, Victor's, you know, places that were huge and well-known, but people didn't necessarily know them because they might not have ever been to them. Then we also chose the stereotypical straight bars like Stenny's, where, you know, people for years were afraid to go in there or even cross the street in front of Stenny's because they thought, you know, they're going to yell at me. They're going to make fun of me. They're going to, I don't know, rush me. I mean, there had been fights between Lacage and Stenny's customers going back to the 80s, like pretty bad ones, too. There was a famous case where some guys at Stenny's harassed some of the drag queens in the show. And one of them, who was like 6'6 and weighed 350 pounds, got into a rumble with the guys and beat the hell out of them. So there was kind of this history of tension between those bars. And, you know, we were able to show that that was then and this is now. I think that the customers thought it was cool and kind of fun to see like these strange shenanigans going on. And then when people would tell them what it was, you know, they would be like, oh, that's cool. And then I think in the back of their minds, they're like, wow, there's a lot of them, you know, like there's a whole lot of these people. And like, how did you get them all to come? The businesses' reactions ranged from fear. There were a few that, you know, we announced that we were coming there and then they would like post a comment or send us a message and be like, you know, we're kind of nervous about this. Like, we don't know why you chose us. What do we need to do? And we'd just be like, just have enough staff on hand for a busy, busy night. That's really all you need to do. It's not like people are going to come in there and break windows. At the end of the night, we would have like bar owners reaching out to us and saying, oh, hey, when can you come back? The only place we ever did twice was Victor's because that was the most famous, popular attended event we ever did. There were close to 400 people that showed up for the event in March of 2008. One, it's a dance club, so people could dance. Two, it was huge, so they didn't have to worry about being crowded. Three, it was on the east side, so it was kind of around other bars, and you know, if it sucked, they could go somewhere else. But four, I think it was just that allure of Victor's, like the reputation, the brand of Victor's, is just this like kind of edgy, kind of naughty, for lack of a better word, swingers club. Now, the reactions from some of the gay bars were not necessarily great. So we got criticized for taking money out of the community, which happens all the time. That's a fight that has gone back to the 70s in Milwaukee when some of the newer discos like Park Avenue would have gay nights on Sundays. And the gay bar owners were furious because they're like, why would you go there to a bar that only wants you on Sunday instead of supporting your own community? Well, they kind of did the same thing with us with Gorilla Gay Bar. They were like, you know, you're taking money away from us. These people should be spending money at my bar. And our response was, well, if you offered the same, you know, experience, if you offered the same sensation, they would be. There was never a fight at one of our events. There was never a rejection of us. There was never anyone asked to leave because they were too drunk or because they were, you know, offending people. There was no, like, you know, lewd or lurid behavior. Unfortunately, I always hoped that something would break out that would be story worthy the next day. But people behaved themselves and they had just had a really good time in this huge mob of people that they felt unity with. And I think that that was also important at that moment in time, as all these legacy bars are closing, to feel like you're losing this, but you still have this. I did this for nearly 10 years on a monthly basis, committed every single first Friday. It's something you do like when you're younger and you have a lot of free time and you have a lot of energy left in you to be creative and clever and kind of intrusive at the same time. And I think that what happened is a lot of people just grew up and suddenly it just wasn't as fun to be, you know, this nightlife outlaw first Friday of every month. I think the legacy is that we were in this window of time where people were looking for fun and there was nothing fun to do. It was to be part of something at that moment in time. And to think about like the looks on people's faces when this mob of people come in and, you know, to see physical affection between same-sex people, to see trans women and men, you know, in a public place. I don't think that people see things like that. They might see one or two gay people with their straight friends. They may see people that they have no idea are on the LGBTQ spectrum just because it's so normal. It's so mainstream. And for a long time, we were heading in this mainstream direction with everything from, you know, marriage equality to trans rights to true equality that seems to have backflipped over the past 8 years. So, you know, maybe Gorilla Gay Bar is needed more than ever. But, you know, I think it's up to the next generation to figure out what that looks like, how it would make a difference. Most importantly, how to achieve that visibility and voice factor, because that's what drives change.
That was Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project Board Chairperson Michael Takash. He spoke with Lake Effect's Jimmy Gutierrez. We'll take one more break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the benefits of drinking mocktails and get some recipe suggestions. That's next on Lake Effect on WUWM. This is Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Milwaukeeans love their cocktails, but over the past few years, there's been a growing trend of people drinking mocktails and other non-alcoholic drinks instead. It's a trend that Venus Williams welcomes as an opportunity to drink more healthily. Williams is the executive director of Alice's Garden and the Fondy Food Center, and she regularly joins us for a series we call Dig In. She joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about the health benefits of mocktails and how to make some at home.
So today we are talking about mocktails. Of course, we are in Milwaukee, where I think a lot of people enjoy their cocktails, but mocktails have been becoming a lot more popular here. What is it about mocktails that actually make them pretty healthy?
Mocktails have so many wonderful benefits in the same context and settings that many people drink cocktails. So it still can be a very social drink minus the alcohol. Some of the benefits is obviously hydration. Mocktails really can help replenish your body's fluids with hydrating ingredients, coconut water, sparkling water, and some healthy fruit juices. And that frame and in that light, mocktails also tend to have fewer calories than your average cocktails. And that really makes it another wonderful benefit, which leads to no alcohol. Alcohol, we know, can be toxic. Alcohol really causes dehydration. Alcohol may cause gut inflammation. And not to mention, it can, for some of us, like myself, who I have to really be careful about my alcohol intake because alcoholism runs in my family deeply and strongly. So no alcohol is obviously one of the huge benefits of mocktails. Then there are the nutrients. Mocktails can be packed with so many minerals and vitamins, nutrients, because of the fresh fruits and the vegetables and the herbs and the base that's used for the mocktails. Another benefit that people always talk about, and often I should say talk about with mocktails, is that you're not going to get a hangover. You won't have that feeling the next morning. And guess what? You can just pick up your life the way it was before you had those drinks the night before.
Always good. Always good. Now, summer seems like a particularly good time for mocktails. And I think part of that is just there's so much fresh stuff that is growing around us. So when you're thinking about a great mocktail, what are you putting in that?
Yeah, it's really important to understand what's a healthy mocktail and what can lead to an unhealthy mocktail. So just eliminating the alcohol is not going to necessarily make it healthy. Of course, we tend to overload on the sugars. And so we really need to be careful about that. So a unhealthy mocktail would have too much soda or sugar or corn syrup, energy drinks. I've seen people make mocktails with energy drinks. Yikes. It's loaded with caffeine and some other things that you really don't want. Artificial flavorings are not something you want in a mocktail, or even flavored waters. There's just no benefit to that. But some of the healthy ingredients that you want to use in a mocktail are freshly squeezed juices. So you're going to get that sugar naturally through those juices, or organic unsweetened juices. Grapefruit juice is a great base. I don't like grapefruit, but it's a great base for mocktails. My favorite is hibiscus, cranberry. I love a peach mocktail base and pomegranate. And just if you listen to and think about the colors of those bases, mocktails can also be so high and rich in antioxidants. And antioxidants just really help your cellular growth and the cellular protection. And it's just they play a critical role in safeguarding our body. So having a base that has these beautiful deep colors, again, such as the hibiscus and the pomegranate, is letting you know that you're going to get some rich antioxidants. Then there's also sparkling mineral water, coconut water. Kombucha is a great base for a mocktail, along with lemon and lime juices, orange juice, of course. So all of these are still things that you would have in a cocktail, minus a bunch of the sugar. And then, of course, there are spices, cinnamon, clove. Are you getting thirsty, Joy? Because I'm getting really thirsty right now. But having some cinnamon, clove, turmeric, ginger, nutmeg, those spices are really, really good in a mocktail. But of course, we're talking summer. So it's really about the fresh herbs that you can have as the focal point of a mocktail.
Yeah, when you think about great summer cocktails, I do think one of the things that a lot of people like to use, myself included, are fresh herbs. Maybe that's mint. Maybe that's even something on a more savory note, like sage. What are the ways that you like to use herbs in a mocktail?
Creating a simple syrup with your fresh herbs is a wonderful way to create another sweetener and a base for a mocktail. So I like to use 2 parts water and 1 part honey with my mocktails, or 1 part raw sugar, because I'm still not making this into an unhealthy drink. You go ahead and bring that to a boil, and then you start to simmer it. And that's when I put my herbs herbs in and I just stir them in. It doesn't matter how many, how much, how big of a bundle of that fresh herb you put into that base, because you're going to make it to taste how you will like to make it. And over time, you'll learn that. So some of my favorite herbs to make a simple syrup out of are basil and lemon thyme, especially. Then there's chocolate mint. I love to use chocolate mint in mocktails, along with apple mint. An apple mint cinnamon mocktail that has maybe a pomegranate juice base or a kombucha base is really good. You know, when you're thinking about making a mocktail, you can also think about what's going on in your life, because they can double as still some medicinals. The other night I made a chamomile mocktail because chamomile is in season right now. And to go ahead, make that simple syrup, I used a peach base, but that chamomile still has all of those wonderful same properties of calm, reducing stress that you would have in a regular tea, but you're just adding a little bit more flavor to it. Rosemary. There are so many mocktails that you will see on bar menus that have rosemary in it. And explore with the rosemary. There are dozens of different varieties of rosemary, just like there are dozens of varieties of mints. We all know about, or we hear often about, a lavender lemonade mocktail that's really, really popular, along with rose. And then learning how to pair those with other things. So I like watermelon and basil together. I really like lemon with rosemary. And then there are just those things that you can play around with. Pineapple sage, lemon balm. Do you see how excited I am? I can't even pause to breathe.
There are a lot of great mocktail recipes that you can make, of course, from the garden. If you don't necessarily want to make your mocktail, you'd prefer to go out, enjoy a drink with friends. Where are some of the places that you like to go in Milwaukee?
There is Boone and Crockett, which is really known for a couple of its lovely mocktails, along with Lost Well. It was Lost Well where I really had my first mocktail that I purchased that I did not create myself. And then, of course, there is Honeybee Sage Wellness Apothecary on MLK Drive that is a sober bar, and you can get all these other wonderful goodies in there with Miss Angela. So I highly recommend Honeybee Sage Wellness Apothecary. Pop in there and grab a mocktail.
Very nice. Now, as always, you have been reading quite a bit this month, every month. What are you reading now?
There are so many mocktail books that you can pick up. I'm just going to name a few. We are actually in Alice's Garden this summer. We're going to do a couple of events called Music and Mocktails. So I have done a deep dive into new recipes. One of my new favorites is Dry. That's the name of the book, Dry. Delicious, handcrafted, and other clever mocktail concoctions. And it's by Claire L-I-A-R-D-E-T. I don't want to mess up her name. But the name of the book is Dry. Another one is Growing Your Own Cocktails, Mocktails, Teas, and Infusions. It also gives gardening tips and a lot more how-tos, from growing the herbs to actually using them. So that's a great user manual if you're also a grower, because some of us will just go and purchase herbs from our local farmers markets. And then there are also a couple of books that are really geared towards expectant moms as they go to social events or host and things. And just two of those titles are Baby Proof, and the other one is Drinking for Two, which puts a whole different spin on it. So there are wonderful, wonderful books out there that you can explore, take to bed with you, or during this time of the year, go ahead and take it to your back porch or your upper patio and enjoy some of these great titles.
A lot of great ways to learn how to make some mocktails and start to work those into your diet.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Well, Venus, thank you as always for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Thank you for having me, and a toast to all of you.
Venus Williams is the executive director of Alice's Garden and the Fondy Food Center. She regularly joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers for a series we call Dig In. You can find their previous conversations at WUWM.com. That's Lake Effect for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Joy Powers, Sam Woods, Excret Nunez, and Jimmy Gutierrez join me in producing Lake Effect each week with help from Robert Larry. Becky Mortensen is our executive producer. We also heard from Lena Tran, Susan Bentz, Taryn Powell, and Mayan Silver from the WUWM news team this week. Jason Reavy is our studio engineer. Michelle Maternowski is our digital manager. Valeria Navarro-Viegas is our digital editor. Trapper Shep wrote our theme music. If you've missed any of Lake Effect this week, you can find all of our conversations at WUWM.com. If you'd like to take the show on the go, you can download the Lake Effect podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Former presidential candidate and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is going to be on the show on Monday. Join us to hear about the stops he's making in Wisconsin and what his message is to voters here. Plus, political conventions began as an event to choose a party's nominee. We'll explore why we still do them now, even though we almost always know who that nominee will be ahead of time. Thanks so much for joining us today, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.